Dr. Craig Cormick is a former science journalist and editor and is widely published on research into the causes of public concerns into new technologies. He's travelled to all seven continents as a science communicator, including presenting at APEC and OECD workshops. Dr. Cormick has published several books and authored the reports What You Really Need to Know About What the Public Really Thinks About GM Foods and Cloning Goes to the Movies. He has written and published, on average, one book a year since 1998, including collections of short fiction, novels, and non-fiction. Dr. Craig Cormick is one of many presenters at the Big Science Communication Summit, held on the 6th and 7th of June in Sydney this year. You've written a number of stories, historical novels, and recently published young adult fiction with the book Time Vandals. What are some of the challenges you face with making science engaging, as particularly across different genres?
The challenge I find is often writing science content that doesn't appear to be about science.
Yeah.
And a lot of the work I've been doing is looking at engaging the unengaged in science. And I think if one thing Australia's become very good at over the past decades or so is picking the low-hanging fruit or talking to the converted. We're very good at getting the converted more engaged and more interested in science, but having their trouble reaching those in the next category down the line, who are the mildly interested or occasionally uninterested. And so the challenge I find is often to, how do you have a conversation about science that's not apparently about science, but has a lot of science intrinsically built in as content?
What do you think has had some of the greatest influence, either positive or negative, in science communication in Australia?
It's one of the things, two-edged sword here, because one of the positives has, in its own way, become a negative as well, and that's the growth of science media, both online and mainstream media. But it does tend to separate people into the science fans and the non-science fans. So we know that the people who listen to the science show and the people who watch documentaries on the ABC and read Cosmos, etc., very highly engaged, and it really is increasing science literacy. But again, tends to be amongst the converted. So while we're hugely successful there, one of the biggest challenges is how do you bring that across into other groups and population? How do you talk to pensioners about science issues where people feel isolated from it? How do you talk to people from low economic groups who don't believe it's relevant to them? How do you find ways to challenge them? And science by stealth is often the answer.
Yeah. What are some of the examples of science by stealth that you think are working well?
We've done a lot of conversations with members of the public discussing science ideas, but we don't tell people they're talking about science.
Ah.
Let's talk about cars. Let's talk about energy. Let's talk about fresh water. Let's talk about things that people do engage on. And once people start talking about problems, and they're all very happy to talk about the problems, then they start talking about solutions to the problems. And very quickly, they come into science. Very quickly. So science is clearly seen as a solution to many of the problems. And again, if you don't tell people you can talk about science, they actually do come there in stages and steps and have very intelligent conversations about it.
Yeah. What are some of the recent developments that excite you when it comes to communicating science?
The understanding of how social psychology works towards what makes people accept or reject different messages. And a lot of this has come from a challenge in the academic world or research world over the past decade or two has been an increasingly narrow streaming. So people are only encouraged to research and publish within their discipline. And what you get is less transdisciplinary research happening whatsoever. However, when climate change became a big issue, that trying to understand why the climate change rejection was happening, why was the climate change drift, people were very keen advocates of climate change in 2007. By 2009, the global financial crisis, they were less supportive. What was happening there? So it was such a high-profile political issue that it forced transdisciplinary study. So you had social scientists and psychologists, and you had enormous cross disciplines sharing data. And what that did, it actually enabled people to map out how values impact our decisions on what technologies we accept and reject. So you could look at people and say, hey, I see a contradiction here in that when it comes to climate change, if you tend to be left of the spectrum, you're saying support the science. You've got to follow the science. And people tend to be politically on the right, conservative tend to say, oh, it's not about the science, you know. But when you come to GM foods, those people swap their positions.
Wow.
Suddenly people on the political right are saying, respect the science, and the people on the conservative, or sorry, the more holistic-based left end of the spectrum, earth values and so on, are saying, no, the science is relevant. So how can that be, that you respect the science on one and then diminish it on the other? And we've come to understand that's all about your intrinsic values. So if your intrinsic values are all about commercialization, industrialization, making profits, then the messages of GM food align with those values. So you'll adopt it. And you're not interested in the science, primarily. It's the values which make you adopt it. However, if you're in the climate change space, those messages that come with climate change are about stop industrialization, stop processing, stop the rest of it. So it clashes with your values, you therefore reject it.
Yeah.
Once we understand that, we're in a position then to start framing messages that align with people's values, or having discussions that align with people's values. Because a lot of the science and technology emerging is far too complex for people to understand. We know that. And people make snap decisions on whether they like it or don't like it simply based on these value sets. Once we understand that, we're in a position to start framing different conversations and getting out of those biases which stop the conversations happening.
It's fascinating how they arise with big issues, such as, for example, I remember Mad Cow, CJD, when that was a big issue, false correlations between vaccines and autism, and how you get people swing from one side to the other, as you mentioned.
Yes, indeed. And you know, you can manipulate that very easily and apply the force of darkness.
Yeah.
And, you know, the most recent case that's been called up was the super trawler, which the lobbying had turned around from Australian waters. The science was very good. The science was saying, no, this is better. This is a better solution. You know, we don't have huge drift nets for a long time for the rest of it. But public outswell turned against it. Largely based on emotive issues. It's very powerful to understand it and be able to work in that space as a science communicator.
Finally, the big science communication summit has five themes that it's going to be investigating during its event. Which ones intrigue you the most?
They all intrigue me the most. And large groups help.
You're just greedy. You want all of them.
I helped frame the theme. So,
oh, good.
So that was one of the reasons why. We looked at, so the whole idea behind the summit was we were looking at doing something different, because everybody has the same science conferences over and over again. We realised it's a bit of Groundhog Day, going to these big science conferences. The same big names get up, tend to say the same type of things, and people in the audience tend to nod their heads, and that's their level of engagement. So we thought, no, there's got to be a better way to do it. And we were running a modelling system called, with the OECD, we've been running them overseas in Australia, whereby we get groups of people to pull their brains together and come up with solutions rather than be listening to other people's solutions. You use the thousands of work years of experience you've got amongst a conference, hundreds at the very minimum. So the idea is, with these five streams, the participants, they're workshops, so they're very hands-on. First of all, they have to identify the impediments to that happening. And as we said before from our conversations, we know people are very good at having discussions about problems. Then they reform into different groups and they discuss the solutions. And we pool everybody's knowledge and data, and then people vote on the best solutions. So you've used the collective consciousness of science communicators and educators and policy people together to reframe, relook at the issues and come up with new ways of thinking about them. Having said that, they're all, I found they're all great topics that really need better addressing. I'm down for the one on better networking, I believe, because it was a harder one to fill expertise on. My personal passion, I think, is the one on engaging all Australians, which is about how do you reach those who are unengaged, both geographically and psychologically, sociologically, economically. But each theme, I think, is going to come up with some really new and interesting things that hopefully is going to go towards not just reframing the science communication discussions in Australia, but in a way that the science communication community can have ownership of.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say. That would be great.
Not at all.
Great. Okay, thanks so much for talking to me, Craig.
Not at all.